You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Thank you and welcome back to the John C. Scott Political Forum on this 15th day of July. I want to thank Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party, for being with us in our first hour. State Representative Pamela Powers-Hanley, a legislator from Legislative District Number 9. She is a Democrat. She's a progressive, proud of being both. And Laura Gomez of Arizona Mirror, investigative reporters in Phoenix, who follow stories to get to the truth about a whole bunch of folks that you don't even know about until you read them in the Arizona Mirror. Well, this hour on the John C. Scott Show, we'll talk with Mo Goldman, one of the best immigration lawyers in all of America. State Senator Steve Farley, who's running for mayor of Tucson, will be with us. And Keith Rosenblum will talk about Mexico and the finance secretary of the Mexican government who has left office. Well, a nationwide immigration crackdown loomed. Religious leaders all across the country using their pulpits just yesterday to quell concerns in immigration communities and spring into action to help those potentially threatened by the operation. We've got a Chicago priest talked during his homily about the compassion of the border activists accused of harboring illegal immigrants, while another city church activist said deportation defense workshops are in full speed and dozens of chambers in Houston, Los Angeles offering sanctuary to anyone afraid of being arrested. In Miami, activists handed out flowers outside of churches to help immigrants know their rights in case of an arrest. Let's talk with immigration lawyer Mo Goldman, who's one of the best immigration lawyers in America. Mo, this is just going to increase these numbers if you're going to have ICE tromping through neighborhoods and rounding up as many people as possible. It just compounds the problem, doesn't it?
It sure does. It just seems to include basically everybody that is a possible target. And even if the government is saying that they're going to be targeting specific individuals, it just raises the fear level across the country. And so the prospects of raids by ICE has a lot of people on edge. So far we haven't seen anything, too extensive. And maybe, they're not bluffing and they're only targeting those 2,000 individuals that ICE said they would be. But nobody really knows for sure at this point.
And what rights do these people have if ICE knocks on their doors and says you're here illegally? Well, they have any rights at all?
Yes, under the Constitution, the Constitution applies to all persons in the United States, and so that would apply the Fourth Amendment, search and seizure, the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendments on due process. And so when we're talking about a person's rights, if an ICE agent or agents comes to their door, they are instructed that they're not to open the door and let the officer into their home. They should not comply unless there's a warrant signed by a judge that is present with the agent. And so, outside of that, when somebody's in their home, they have a right to deny entry. And we saw some video over the weekend of individuals, I think it was in New Jersey, that wouldn't open their door, and the agents were outside and were unable to access them. And so I think that's one of the most critical aspects of a Know Your Rights campaign, where you're explaining to somebody, what they can or cannot do in that circumstance. And so as long as people understand that they still have rights, that at that point at least they know that they can, take their own course of action. We're not telling them to violate the law in any way. It's totally within the Constitution for them to say, I am not opening up the door for you.
Now, are most of these warrants with names on them and issued by a judge, or are they just blanket warrants saying we're going to this address for these people and that's
these
people?
Well, normally the ICE agents don't have a warrant, and that's why, or at least they don't have one that's signed by a judge. They may have a warrant, but not one signed by a judge, and that's why individuals are instructed not to open their door unless they actually have one signed by a judge. I mean, it's a little more of a undertaking for the agents to have to get one signed, and so you don't see it that often. Maybe you'll see more of those in the future as word gets around about this, but traditionally they would show up without one.
Now, some of these folks, I guess, would be subject to just removal from the United States almost immediately. I mean,
correct.
Put them on a plane and send them back to wherever, I guess.
Well, that's one possible scenario. Another one would be if they still have some sort of, last gasp in their immigration case, they may be able to have a hearing on their fear of going back under the Convention Against Torture, although that's, probably not as likely. Or if they are armed with, good legal counsel, they might be able to file a habeas, which might, stop the removal while their case is under review. But, unfortunately for those individuals, if they have a final order of removal, then the government can reinstate that or instate that removal order and expeditiously remove them from the United States.
Carl's a caller to our show. Carl, you're with Mo Goldman, immigration lawyer. Thanks for your call. Carl, welcome.
Yes. My understanding is that the initial 2,000 that they were going after had gone through the complete process and had been ordered to remove, and a lot of them were MS-13 and gangbangers and that sort of thing, and felons. And they had already gone through the entire complete process, and what you were talking about, the expeditious removal at that point.
Yeah.
And they're not out there just looking for people to pick them up.
No, and that's my understanding as well. I think where things got really hairy was when the president tweeted out that they were going to deport millions, and so I think a lot of people, were on edge because of that. But yes, it is true that they are supposedly targeting, individuals. I don't know if they were, gangbangers or MS-13, but definitely ones that had final orders of removal, which there are. There's thousands of people like that in the U.S. right now. We know that that's the case. I'm assuming that if they are going to target, knowing that they do have some, limited resources when it comes to going out and trying to round up individuals, they, ICE is going to use it in a more targeted fashion. But that, it seems to make sense to me if they were going out and doing it that way.
Okay, now that's my point, is because the activists are out there beating the thumbs that are the drums that ICE is out there and they're just going to be sweeping through the neighborhoods, and if you look like a Hispanic, they're going to pick you up and they're going to ship you out. I mean, and that's not true. And people are just making the worst case and trying to make it look as bad as they possibly can. And they, like you, that's not true.
Well, yeah, and the reaction, I think, a lot of what we're seeing is reaction to the president. I mean, if the president comes out and says, we're going to deport millions, then I think you're going to get, kind of a similar reaction from the activist community. Activists, my experience with activists and people who are out there, like you said, beating the drum, they tend to go to some extremes, and that's why they're, you see more extremists in activist positions. But I do think that there needs to be awareness for a lot of individuals out there who are not MS-13 or gangbangers. I mean, it is a bit of a learning process for individuals to know what their rights are. But Yeah, I mean, you know, are we dealing in times where there's unnecessary, fear spread? In some ways, yes, but, you know, that I think is the nature of, you know, the, you know, time we're living in right now. It just seems like everything, you know, seems to go up, you know, to an 11 on the, on the scale, of any time that anything comes out. I mean, you know, news comes out about, the Trump administration doing one thing or another thing. Everyone goes a little bit crazy.
Okay, Carl. All right. Appreciate your call very much. Mo Goldman is an immigration lawyer. He's my guest in this hour. Mo, the whole idea that you seek some kind of relief at the border, then you're sent back to Mexico to wait to see if a hearing is going to be held on your behalf. You could be back in Mexico, literally along the border, without any housing or food or any kind of organized help along the way for months and months and months. Until somebody comes and calls your name, I guess. Is that the way it is?
It is, and it's a dangerous environment for individuals who are there that don't have any, you know, place to live, or they just are not protected, and, you know, there's dangerous individuals that could easily attack them, and they're unarmed. And so, yes, it's definitely, as you describe, I mean, that's the Remain in Mexico protocol that was put in place by this administration. And now, as of tomorrow, an interim rule is being published by both the Department of Justice and the Department of Homeland Security regarding individuals who attempt to enter or enter the United States across the southern land border if they fail to apply for protection from persecution or torture while in a third country, namely Mexico, through which they're transiting, you know, en route to the United States, they will be ineligible to get asylum. So basically what this rule is saying is if you do not ask for protection in what they consider a safe country like Mexico, the U.S. government will deny your ability under the U.N. Convention or under our asylum laws to get or access relief for asylum, and so that there's a huge narrowing of the process for individuals who come through Mexico.
Wow, is this new? I mean, is this just new?
Yeah, it just came out today.
Or is this legal? Can they get away with it?
Well, no. I mean,
well, okay.
This is yet another test of how far the administration can go. There's definitely, you know, going to be legal action taken against it because it's an interim rule, which means the government can implement it without any sort of comment period and without having to go through certain, you know, procedures that a proposed rule would have to go through that takes time. This is going to go into effect as of tomorrow. My guess is that within probably a few hours after it goes into effect, we're going to see legal action taken, challenging the constitutionality of it and also challenging the procedures that were taken to implement it because it definitely bypasses any sort of normal process and procedure under the Administrative Procedures Act. And it flies in the face of the United Nations Convention relating to the status of refugees. It basically takes decades of immigration asylum law and throws it out the window. And
by the way, it seems to me that if you're representing somebody who's seeking asylum, they've appeared at the border, then have been returned to Mexico. How the hell do you find them again? There's no address. There's no telephone number. There's no cell phone. I mean, how do you find your client?
Well, and how do they have lawyers?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I have no idea.
In most cases, these individuals will not have legal counsel. And so, you know, if they're just, you know, basically transient, out living on the streets, I mean, that is a big problem. Definitely. I mean, there are a lot of problems, but one of the biggest ones is how do you find these individuals when their time finally comes up to have a hearing and they're just sitting around in Mexico, trying to make ends meet? You know, how does that work? How is there any sort of due process? And there isn't. I mean, that's the reality of it. And they don't have access to legal counsel. We've had cases, and I've talked about this before with you, of lawyers who have traveled to Mexico that are now on a list being targeted by the administration, who are being targeted because the administration said that they were basically advising these individuals on how to misrepresent or lie about their claims. And I know these lawyers wouldn't do that. And I'm friends with a few of them, and it's stunning. It's chilling what's going on, because you're taking a legal civil process and completely throwing it out the window.
This is getting stupid.
It's insane.
It's horrible. Mel Goldman, thanks for being with us, and thanks for the update.
No problem,
always appreciate, obviously,
thank you,
your observations. Thank you, Carl, for that call. Absolutely. Thanks, Mo. We'll
Not
talk again
we'll
very, very soon.
Later.
I hope so. Thank you. Appreciate it. Mo Goldman, one of the best immigration lawyers in all of America. You know, I've been trying to tell you about Perfection Auto Works. I got my car repaired at Mike Emery's Perfection Auto Works. Three reasons to go there. Mike Emery, who's honest, and then Mike Emery, who's fair, and then Mike Emery, who's professional, and repairs every car that you could ever imagine. These are the people that you can trust to fix your car right. There's hundreds and hundreds of options when it comes for car repair in Tucson, Arizona. There's only one, Perfection Auto Works. Each service technician is ASE certified, and customers' reviews online for everybody to see. I'm so proud of being able to be a spokesperson for Mike Emery's Perfection Auto Works. They repaired my car, saved over $1,000. I got an honest repair, and now I don't ever have to worry about my car being repaired again, ever. Something goes wrong, you just call him, say, fix it, and he does. And I know it's an honest job and a quality job at a fair price. What else would you want from a car repair? Mike Emery's Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. That's 1046 North Beverly. You call 323-8650. 323-8650. Mike Emery's Perfection Auto Works. I'm John C. Scott. I trust Mike Emery to repair my family cars, and you can too. It's a very simple statement. Mike Emery's Perfection Auto Works, 1046 North Beverly. Call him at 323-8650. Best call you'll ever make to get your car repaired. Back in a moment. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum. Steve Farley is a longtime legislator and now candidate for mayor of Tucson, seeking the Democratic nomination for mayor. Here is Steve Farley. Well, Steve, welcome to the show. I'm glad you could join us. Thanks so much.
Always great to be here, John. Thank you.
A lot of things have happened. The proposals from HLS Properties, which, of course, the owners, Humberto Lopez, of Arizona Hotel downtown, which has been shuttered for almost a decade, and a blight on the downtown, and now a proposal that apparently has been tentatively accepted by the city council and mayor. Are you pleased with what you've seen of this proposal?
Well, I haven't seen the details, but I think it's a good idea to be able to get more hotel rooms downtown, because that's been one of the things that has really gotten in the way of us getting the really major conventions that could be huge for our economy down here, is the lack of hotel rooms. So being able to get an additional top quality hotel down there, as opposed to something that's been rotting for years and years now, is a good step in the right direction. We just have to make sure that this is not something where we give away taxpayer monies without getting something at least as much in return, plus much more.
Yeah, they have been trying to come up with some kind of solution to what to do with this hotel for, it just seems, year after endless year. Arizona Hotel, 181 West Broadway, closed since 2012. It's been a long time. 2012.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, developers asking for the 8-year government property lease excise tax, and that would abate the property taxes. Additional reimbursement would be 100% reimbursement of the city's construction sales tax, cap the 2%, reimbursement of 45% of the sales and bed taxes generated for 3 years after the certificate of occupancy has been issued. The city has all kinds of means by which they can reduce the amount of overhead for a company involved in a situation like this to restore what has been vacant and literally shuttered for almost a decade. And now we're back into a situation where I think they've come up with something that most people can agree is would say it's about time. It's about time.
Exactly. I mean, we've got to make sure that all our property is providing everything we need to get the kind of conventions we want down here. And since downtown is booming, I think people are starting to look at starting up things that they hadn't thought about before.
Let me take you to another subject that is very near and dear to you. After rejecting hospitals and hotels and other buildings, you got Pima County and the Roman Catholic Diocese choosing a juvenile detention center to house migrant families seeking asylum. I ask you about it because obviously the city was involved with the Ward 6 council person, Steve Kosacek, working with the owners of the property at the Benedictine Monastery at 3rd and Country Club to house these people who are in an interim situation moving from the border to here and then throughout the United States. Is this detention center of the county the best we can do?
Those of us who have been over to the Benedictine Monastery know that they've had a lot of issues trying to fit the use into that space. I mean, when you get 300 or 400 people at times into that space, it has really been pushing the envelope in terms of what the plumbing could handle, what the kitchen could handle, and it was not designed for that kind of use. So I've been working with Catholic Community Services and their Casa Elitis program. I first took a tour of their facility 2 years ago when there were only 7 or 8 people coming across to seek asylum per day. They just had a small house in Midtown. And Diego Lopez, who runs the place, I've got such admiration and trust for him. The amount of people he's been able to help, getting no money for himself for it, he is just a saint. And Steve Kosacek has really jumped up and stepped up, and he may be categorized for sainthood as well with the kind of work he's done with the monastery. When they looked at the former juvenile detention facility, and you look at that, and in fact, the families will be able to get their own private bedrooms, their own private bathrooms, and it's actually a wonderful place that meets all the needs that we would need to have right there without overwhelming things like the plumbing system at the monastery, so it may be even more ideal. So it's a little upsetting when I saw people saying certain people were getting on top of it and saying, oh, the optics aren't right. Well, the fact is, we shouldn't be like condemning our juvenile prisoners to something that's terrible either. And when you actually look at the facilities here, it is not the kind of thing you would imagine a horrible detention facility to be. It's a good facility with new stuff, and it has the ability to be able to do what we need to do it. I don't think it's appropriate that we be grandstanding on saying, oh, well, it used to be on a juvenile detention center, so the optics are bad. Let's look at the reality of it. And the last thing we wanted to do was kick out an autism program from a school that was offered up without people even talking about that. This seems to be a great situation for us to be able to make sure that our asylum seekers are welcomed and shown hospitality, and that the facility is something that works for what we're trying to do.
Well, this facility's been vacant for quite some time, hasn't it? I mean, I don't recall it being used for a long time. But
no, it has, because most of the juvenile justice system has focused more on rehabilitation and alternatives to incarceration, and that's the way it should be. These are kids, and the more you can redirect them from a future career in jail, the better off everyone's going to be. And that means making sure they stay with their families, that they get support for substance abuse issues or other behavioral health issues instead of incarcerating kids. So there hasn't been much use for it for a while. And it's a relatively new facility, so it's actually perfectly set up for what we need to do. And you got to trust Diego Lopez and Casa Elitis and Catholic Community Services when they make the right decision to use this as our next facility.
We're talking with Steve Farley, who is a Democratic candidate for mayor. Tucson police have sent more than 500 people struggling with opioid addiction to treatment rather than to jail over the past year. I wasn't aware of this. It's a grant-funded county program, and the effort's called Deflection, saved taxpayers about $150,000. And last July, a Tucson Police Department rolled out this 6-month pilot program in 2 divisions, allowing the opioid districts the opportunity to be placed into treatment without the risk of arrest or incarceration. And the program involved in self-referral by drug users and outreach by caseworkers and officers to connect with people who recently fell out of drug treatment are experienced an overdose. This has been an epidemic. It's finally on everybody's radar. This TPD, Tucson Police Department, treatment rather than jail, makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and that's exactly the direction that I've been pushing for in my time in the legislature. And it's something that actually gets bipartisan support because you save taxpayers money at the same time as saving lives and reducing crime. It's a win-win-win thing. The only person that loses is the private prisons that profit off of incarceration. And it's about time that they lost because there's been too much benefit given to the private prisons in the state of Arizona in general. The fact is, if you really want to improve our public safety, you want to stop people from committing crimes in the first place. And if people are committing crimes because they've got a substance abuse problem, treat that problem, and then they won't be committing the crimes again, and they'll be back contributing to society. And as that happens, we can start spending less on incarceration and more on education to stop people from committing crimes in the first place, and that boosts our economy at the same time. It's that kind of win-win-win thing is part of why I'm in public service in the first place. And I'm so happy that TPD has the leadership and the ability to be able to get these grants and go for these grants and put them into place. And they got, you know, they didn't even know how well this was going to work. They had very limited goals for how many people would take part in this, but it's gone well beyond their expectations. And that has a significant impact on reducing crime rates, property crimes, violent crimes, and it saves a lot of money for the city at the same time. So that's exactly what we need to be doing, and the type of creative problem solving that I want to be able to put in place as mayor across the board.
Well, this will take you back to your legislative days, and that is criminal justice reform. I don't know why this legislature has been so reluctant to even deal with any faces of some kind of reform. We know we have thousands of people locked up in our prisons that really shouldn't be there, or certainly shouldn't be there the time that they are to serve. We know we're spending millions and millions of dollars. That is a waste because we're warehousing these people without education or job skills. We just let them back out and then they come back again. I don't understand. I suppose people like the public defender will tell us, well, wait a minute, it's the prosecutors who are blocking every step we take to try to do something about criminal justice reform because they want the power that they have now. What's the reason this legislature can't deal with criminal justice reform, which is so sorely needed in our state, Stephen?
There's actually a lot of support for criminal justice reform on both Democratic and Republican sides. The problem in this legislature has been Senator Eddie Farnsworth, who's the chair of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate. He personally objects to the very idea of even discussing judicial reform. So he will not allow any bill that gets through the House, no matter how overwhelming the support is, to be able to be heard in this committee. And when a bill isn't heard in committee, it dies. This is the autocracy in the heart of our democracy, is that every chair of every committee has the right to kill a bill single-handedly if they don't like it. And he's a hard guy to move off of his beliefs. Very, very ideological and very stuck in exactly what he believes, and he doesn't want to be persuaded otherwise. So that's a tough one. And I think there's going to have to be a commitment on the part of leadership above him in the Senate to not be intimidated by the fact that he's tearing down things that are supported even by people like the Koch brothers. Because ultimately, even folks like that see the correction system as being a new welfare state that drains their taxes that they're paying to the government, so they want to get rid of it. This is a tremendous opportunity for us to have that kind of coming together moment where we realize that this should be a correction system, not a punishment system. And when it becomes that, we're seeing states around the country already having tremendous success focusing on rehabilitation, focusing on behavioral health, substance abuse treatment, and education to be able to give people an opportunity to totally change the course of their life if they've gotten on the wrong road and ended up in a prison. That's how we make a better society, a stronger economy, and pay less on things that our government is paying things on now that it shouldn't be, like prisons.
You know, Steve Farley, this primary election that you're involved in with two other Democrats seeking the Democratic nomination for mayor of Tucson's right around the corner. People are going to start voting soon. I mean, we just kind of look
over. August 2nd is when they get mailed out. We got just over 2 weeks.
Look over your shoulder and you go, wow, that came up fast, and it's there. It's here. So,
yeah, we've had a whole bunch of forums going all over the place, all over town. There's another another forum tomorrow night for the Institute of Architects. There's a forum at Rincon High School on Thursday night that the Pima County Democratic Party is sponsoring. Rotary Club's doing one the week after that. We're continuing to just have these forums all over town, talking about who we are, what we'll do when we're in office. And I'm excited about the support we've been getting. The endorsements I've been able to get from police, fire, Teamsters, and teachers have been huge. I had 30 firefighters walking door to door for me last Saturday. People are signing up for my phone banks three nights a week. We're having the Democratic headquarters to drop on by anytime between 4 and 8 on a Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, doing the walking every weekend and some afternoons. It's exciting what we're seeing, and people at the doors are there. They know who I am. And even if you come into people who don't know that there's an election coming up, when you tell them who I am and what I've accomplished, they vote for me. So I feel pretty good about our chances of being able to win this, but we got to work as hard as we can to make sure the message goes out about the proven track record I've been able to deliver results for Tucson in the legislature and how innovative I've been, with that sort of artist side in me, always looking for new ways to solve problems that, you know, may have been tough to solve in the past, but I believe we can. I have the record of being able to bring people together, even across big divides, in order to solve these problems. So I'm excited about what we can do. And if people want to get engaged, go to the website at steveforTucson.com.
That's my last question for you, but you've answered it. Thank you. Thank you so very much, Stephen. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again very, very soon. Good luck in your campaign. Thank you for being with
us.
Thank
you again, John. Yeah. I appreciate it.
You're more than welcome. Steve Farley, a Democratic candidate for mayor of Tucson. We're going to talk with Keith Rosenblum. He's covered the border of Mexico and the Mexican government's political side for decades. He's really damn good at it and pretty much knows what the hell's going on in Mexico. And that's why we have him on the show, to tell you what the hell's going on in Mexico. Back after this. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum. He's one of the most respected international correspondents in the United States and North America. He's covered Mexico's politics for the last 30 years. He's just one damn good reporter. Here is Keith Rosenblum on Mexico. Well, Keith, we got the Mexico finance minister quitting over disagreements with the president. Is this the first break in, I guess, this almost unbreakable handle and firm grip that our president of Mexico has on his country?
Resignation does not worry Keith Rosenblum, who is as respected as you say.
Yes.
It is one more in a cabinet of diverse people who have been with López Obrador for a long time. A resignation is not to be frothed over. It's one guy who didn't believe with the man's policy. He resigns. The peso reacts temporarily. I think it recovered. Actually, I'm in Nogales, Mexico, and a little bit I'll be changing pesos for dollars, so I'll be able to give you a better account of that. But I'll start to worry when there's three or four or mass resignations. But right now, one guy who says, boss, this is not going to work out, that's show me one guy that does that. It's a principled resignation. Show me three or four or five, and I'll show you a government in shambles.
By the way, this Mexico finance minister, Carlos Urzorba, apparently quit his post last week, 7 months into the job. The Mexican peso, as you mentioned, tumbled more than 2% in the aftermath of the announcement before rebounding somewhat. But the resignation points to perhaps a deeper problem plaguing Andrés Manuel López Obrador, the president of Mexico. But it's not a Donald Trump problem. The leftist firebrand remains popular with the Mexican electorate.
And John, yeah. When you have things don't tumble 2%.
They don't tumble?
2%. If I told you that your net worth had diminished by 2% today, it would probably bother you a little bit if you say, gee, I hope it recovers and I have 2% more back tomorrow. But that is hardly a tumble. Okay. That is like a little bit of a slide. And the reaction of financial markets are more on other news anyway on a day-to-day basis. So let's not get sucked into the hyperbole of the AP or other news organizations.
Well, Pemex oil output fell to its lowest level in 40 years, and with that, the government finances needed to fund ambitious social programs, and so, you know, it fluctuates. You're absolutely right. So we don't need to worry.
I just want to make sure that when you and I become Chicken Little operatives,
yep,
that we do it for the right reasons.
We will. I promise you that. We will do it for the right reasons. The support for Obrador is still strong. There's nothing to panic about. He lost his finance minister. He'll get another one. No big deal, right?
Once more, I urge people to listen to this guy. You might end up disagreeing with everything he says and is, but go on your when you go to Facebook or you go to your Google browser or YouTube browser, put in Noticiero, N-I-T-I-C-I-E-R-O. N-O-T-I-C-I-E-R-O, Noticiero, N-E-N, and then Redes, R-E-D-E-S. Those are the news broadcast online is what that translates as. And every day, well, 5 days a week and sometimes six, that guy is on, and he really is ubiquitous, and he'll tell you how he's running government. So agree with him, disagree with him, the guy is laying out the way that people believe that government, that transparency is supposed to be. And it's a marvel to watch. And again, not that people are going to agree with what he's doing with his money. There's a lot of wealth distribution, distribution that's going on in this administration. There's a lot of people, students, elderly, certain groups of the population that are getting pensions or getting allotments. But he's open about it. He's saying, here's what we're going to do. We're redressing these wrongs from, a decade back or two decades back. Most of what López Obrador says is the neoliberal era. We're going to correct all the errors from the last 36 years, which are six pre-president. No, they're not either. I'm wrong about that. Sorry. It's a combination of pre- and pan-presidents. But he's saying that their economic policies were equally misguided. And so it's his duty to correct the errant policies of those 36 years. Almost every sentence he comes back to concludes with that. He also has a really interesting saying, which I have to say I like, and I think he's actually right on the money on this one, and it is right on the money. He says, no puede haber gobierno rico con pueblo pobre. You can't have a rich government with a poor pueblo, poor public. And actually, it's a truism in Mexico. For many years, if you wanted to make money, you would go into government, not merely for government salaries that were substantially higher than comparable private sector, but also because the perks of being in government then became even greater. So on top of a really good salary, a really good benefit, you would also have lots of opportunities to make. So this is one of his mantras. And he has a lot of support there. If you watch the comments, and now those newscasts to which I refer, which are every morning on Tucson time, I think 6 a.m., they go generally from 6 to either 7 or 7:30. I think the audience is 150,000 viewers. And it's quite a participation. And you see people making their comments, and the guy has public support. And again, when I worked for Jim Colby, I can't tell you the number of people that would come up to Jim before or after a gathering and say, Congressman, you know what, I disagree with you. I disagree with you on, and then there'd be this litany of things. I disagree with you on right to choose. I disagree with you on Afghanistan. I disagree with you on handling the economy. I disagree with you on relations on NAFTA. I disagree with you on refugee status for whomever. They would go on and on, and then they'd say, but you know what, I like you, and I'm going to vote for you. So this is why it's a mistake, especially for Americans, to believe that somehow López Obrador, that Mexico is so oriented toward policy that he's going to be tossed out based on political, on policy or political matters. This country is in a love affair with a president who levels with them. Even if you disagree with him, you would tell him if he was in front of you, I disagree with you, dude, but you sure are leveling with me and treating me as an adult. Thank you.
By the way, we were talking with Mo Goldman, our immigration lawyer, talking about those that seek asylum in the United States, but have a hearing in this country, then are sent back to await an announcement of a return for another hearing in the United States. And some have been sitting there for weeks and weeks and months, and maybe even longer. And may be subject to all kinds of ills, such as lack of food, lack of sanitation, lack of safety and security. Have you seen large numbers of immigrants in Nogales, Sonora, or anywhere else that are waiting for a return to a court in the United States over the asylum issue or not?
No, I don't see them, and there is no lack of those things. I'm in Nogales, Mexico right now. I'm on the south end. And what I see in Nogales is a city that is, if you took everyone in Tucson and lopped off between a half to two-thirds of their possessions and the money that they have, which would still leave you quite a bit. That would mean that some of the super rich would just become rich and some of the rich would just become upper middle class and some of the upper middle class would just become middle class. Anyway, there's no one lacking in anything in Nogales, Mexico, period. It sounds kind of wanton or maybe irresponsible to say something like that or a sort of blanket affirmation, but guess what? There's no one lacking anything. So, no, I certainly have not heard that. I see lots of people who have been deported from the U.S. I see for one reason or another, and they're in shelters or they're going to pick up money that are sent to them from abroad or they're making do, put it that way. I don't want to create a Garden of Eden scenario here. It's not that, but nothing that would repulse you.
As you take a look at the border itself, the razor wire still up, still ugly. Nobody's changing that. That's really too bad. Have merchants been still protesting against this razor wire and asked the federal government to take it down, and nothing's really happened, right? I mean, it's there to stay. We put it up.
It's a non-issue of our times, at least on the Mexican side. It's just ugly. What are those Americans thinking? Gross me out. And on the Arizona side, Mayor Garino, Anthony Garino, is protesting. He's always been against it. He's been very eloquent in protesting it. And I don't know if his protests have led anywhere. I doubt it. Obviously, you're right. The wire's still there. But no, it's one of those things you just come to accept. It's like every so often, I go down, you know, on 22nd Street, and a train stops me. I just accept that train is there, and it becomes a part of the landscape. I guess that's the best way to describe it. No, there's nothing. It's probably the way that Berliners treated the wall as well, or the Israelis and Palestinians treat the fence that's been put up there. It just becomes a part of the landscape.
Do we still have unfinished business with the Nash with NAFTA 2 or the rewriting of the trade laws, or is there still something hanging out there that hasn't been signed or agreed to, and it's just hanging there waiting for somebody to do something about?
I'm outside my knowledge zone, and I know that the Mexicans have approved it and are waiting for us.
Yeah,
and because
that's
country,
the way I understand it. Yes.
Is as unified and as does everything in concert. It's amazing to me that we haven't yet addressed it, but we haven't yet addressed it, and who knows when and if we will.
Well, the economy of Mexico is still humming along in the summer of 2019. Things are good for Mexico and the state of Sonora
it
in particular.
It is a place you want to invest, and I'm saying this as somebody who has no investments at all.
Really?
I see this country roaring, and I'm very optimistic.
So if I sent you some...
I hope you have on your show. Go ahead.
If I sent you some money, you could invest it for me, couldn't you?
I would invest your money and insist on my on taking 50%
well, of course you would.
The net profit. But yes, I would say that the money invested today, dollar for dollar, peso for peso, is doing very well. And as I say, I have no horse in this race. But from people that I see and the people who are waiting in line, and as you look at the outside of the headlines, there's an awful lot of prosperity, and it really is a lot of peaceful coexistence. There's some nasty part of this country, some nasty things going on. But if you're law-abiding, play by rules, and you don't look to get yourself in trouble, there's a lot that you can do in place like
that. Joseph Bloom, great to talk with you. I appreciate you being on the show, and we get so many positive feedback from the times you're on, and we'll just keep having you on. That's the way it works. Thanks.
Well, and if you'd only add maybe six or seven more times the word respect before you introduce me.
I could do that. I could add that.
Highly respected.
Thank you. Highly respected. One of the best. Things like that. Keith, good to talk with you. Have a great week. Appreciate you being on the show. Keith Rosenblum's covered Mexico for 30 years and covers it on the John C. Scott Show on a regular basis. I want to thank the people at Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly for sponsoring our show. We've talked about Mike Emery because he's honest. We've talked about Mike Emery because he's fair. And we've talked about Mike Emery because his professionals repair every car and every time they make it right. These are hundreds of options you have every time something goes wrong with your car. Hundreds of options. You can go to any yellow page, any street. You'll find somebody that'll say they're going to fix your car. But who's going to stand by that repair? Who's going to take the most skilled mechanics in all of Tucson and offer you a fair price for them to repair your car? Well, the people at Perfection Auto Works will do that at Mike Emery. Mike Emery at Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. Just call them at 323-8650. I'm John C. Scott, and I trust Mike Emery to repair my family cars, and you can do the same. Mike Emery's a great guy, and he has a great auto shop. Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. Again, 323-8650 is the phone number. I'm John C. Scott, and I've been telling you why I recommend Perfection Auto Works for my car repair, and now you know why. This is KVY The Voice. This is the John C. Scott Show. I want to thank you so much for being a part of our show today. I want to thank Don Jorgensen, the former chair of the Democratic Party, for his comments on Donald Trump telling four congresswomen to go back to the country they came from. Of course, the country they came from is the United States. He failed to mention that. State Representative Pamela Powers Handley was on our show talking about a public health model that is involved with prevention, and she believes in it so strongly she's touting it all over wherever she goes. Laura Gomez is with us. She's with Arizona Mirror. This is a group of investigative reporters that work out of Phoenix to try to get to the truth of what's going on with our state government, what's going on in the capital city, what's going on in Arizona. Laura Gomez, investigative reporter with Arizona Mirror, featured a story about transgender detainees at the border in New Mexico and the lack of care that they want to receive. Mo Goldman's with this immigration lawyer, talking about how much worse it's getting at the border for anybody that wants legal advice and legal aid in this country from those that really have to find it. Mo Goldman is one of the best immigration lawyers in the country. Steve Farley was with us. He is a longtime legislator seeking the Democratic nomination for mayor of Tucson, facing two opponents. And obviously, this longtime legislator is said to be the front runner in a race of three for the Democratic nomination. The winner faces off against an independent candidate for mayor of Tucson, Ed Ackerley. I want to thank Keith Rosenblum again for being a part of our show, our Mexico reporter who has 30 years of doing stories at the border and telling you what's going on, not only south of the border, but what is going on between the United States and Mexico. We thank you so much for being a part of our show. Again, thanks Don Jorgensen, State Representative Pamela Powers Handley, Laura Gomez of Arizona Mayor, Mo Goldman, immigration lawyer, Steve Farley, candidate for mayor, and Keith Rosenblum, our Mexico reporter. Have a great evening, everyone. Coming up next is Steve Rivera with the best local talk of sports in all of America. This is a great talk show, and nobody covers the sports scene in Tucson, Arizona, as well as Steve Rivera. He's next at KVY The Voice. Trusted local news and talk. Glad you could join us, everyone. Back tomorrow, 3 to 5 over this backyard fence, talking the politics of Southern Arizona, now in our 31st year of continuous political talk. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum. Thanks for listening.